Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. You know, lots of times when we talk about the remarkable progress that our region has made in the last few years, we forget about the challenges that are still in front of us. And one of our friends over at the School of Journalism who keeps reminding us that we're not through is our friend Farrell Guillory, who has agreed to talk to us in the context of Farrell. You're the author of a series of, the principal leading author of a series of publications called The State of the South. And we're looking for one for 2014, and you're working on it. And you got a whole different focus and set of challenges in front of us. Will you talk to us about it?
Sure. Well, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to be here. You make me think. By the questions you ask. Yes, State of the South has been a series of reports produced by MDC.
Tell us what, you know, I should have mentioned MDC, and it's MDC, it meant something before.
Yeah, MDC is a fascinating enterprise. I've been associated with MDC since 1995. I'm a senior fellow, and my principal work there has to do with State of the South. And it's a team effort, but let me first explain MDC. MDC began its life as the North Carolina Manpower Development Corporation. It was an outgrowth of the old North Carolina Fund that Terry Sanford initiated during his administration. That was the pilot, as it were, for the anti-poverty programs. And as the fund itself phased out, it spun off a couple of things. And MDC was one of them. And so MDC has been a remarkably durable nonprofit. It's nearly
amazing.
50 years old now. Was based in Chapel Hill for most of its life. Recently moved to Durham because it needed some more space and self-help. The credit union worked out an arrangement so that MDC could have some really historic and funky office space right on Main Street in Durham. And so we over at MDC have formed a team, as usual, to take a look at the southern landscape of 2014. Our report, we're working on it real hard right now, probably will emerge sometime in mid-fall. Working title of the working focus this time is youth, young adults, and the future of the South. So we're specifically looking at the prospects for adolescents, young adults in the modern economy.
Farrell, this struck me upside the head because I was expecting another report on the importance of recruiting business, of expanding the existing businesses, of pushing the economic life of the region forward again. And as a peripheral part of it, the importance of education, both higher education and K through 12. But this is a little bit different, what you all are looking at. And are you looking at it in a different way?
Well, some of it stems from earlier work by MDC on what we call disconnected youth in the Durham area. And MDC has a project going on right now called Made in Durham that brings together I'm not particularly fond of this word, stakeholders, you know, different people around the community, public officials, university types, business, civic leaders, to focus on disconnected youth. Disconnected means not in school, not in a job, just simply not connected to anything in the mainstream. And so so we're going to deal with disconnected youth in the State of the South report, but State of the South report is broader. It's looking at educational prospects, job prospects, community building, and how they bear on the future of the South. Let me while I'm rolling here, let me continue.
Right ahead.
And so looking at youth, young adults, and the future of the South has got us into thinking about and reading the recent studies on income inequality, on social and economic mobility. There was a big study out of Harvard and Berkeley that we're drawing on. You know, it gets you thinking about some of the big issues facing the country, minimum wage, school reform, and all of that. Some of those are so big, not that we don't understand them, but what we've decided to do is to say, while there is political gridlock in Washington, while there is disinvestment, you know, budget cutting, tax cutting on the state level across the South, what can specific communities do to put young people on a pathway upward?
Well, okay, all of us would agree that we need to give youth opportunities, and this would be something that would be a challenge that goes through society forever. What's special about it today in the South?
Well, what we've done is to send teams of young staff people around the South. We are profiling what's going on in eight or nine communities, two in North Carolina, two in Texas, Greenville, South Carolina, Arkansas, to look at what's going on in specific locales. That's a prelude to answering your question, which is what's going on now. What's going on now is great uncertainty for youth and young adults. I was thinking about, you know, our generation, you know, what about grandparents' generation of these children, of these youth, young adults? Well, they emerged out of World War II. It was the GI Bill. There was investment in public schools and public education. In the South, we were going through the Civil Rights Movement, but there were jobs in textile mills and furniture factories and in lumber mills. The urbanization of the South gave my, you know, helped my dad get a job in insurance. There was a certain certainty. I mean, there were problems, but there was some certainty. You know, we were building a middle class. My generation, I was in high school and college throughout the 1960s. You know, we're a part of the change in the South that was propelled by the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act, and you know, the new investment in the South. Post-Vietnam, as we said in an earlier State of the South, the South led the nation in population growth and job growth during the 80s and 90s. And we were importing jobs and we were importing people, population growth. But again, there was a certain certainty about things. There was discontent, distress in some of our rural areas. There was distress in our cities, you know, in neighborhoods of people left behind. MDC did a report in the mid-80s called Shadows in the Sun Belt. But there was still this sense of propulsion. Unfortunately, the two recessions of the last decade, the short, shallow recession of 2000-2001, and then the really big recession of 2007 to 2009, we are not recovering very well from those. Unemployment rate's going down, but people have exited the labor force. We've got polarization not only in politics, but polarization in jobs of, you know, a lot of high-end, high-skilled, high-wage jobs, which we need. But a lot of job creation is at low-wage, low-skill level. We don't do summer youth employment as well as we used to. Some of the studies show that university graduates, BA and above, it's still better to have a university degree than not have it. I mean, there's people who say,
We're not really at a breaking point. We've got to take a break.
Okay.
And I'm visiting For those of you who joined us late, Farrell Guillory, and we're talking about the challenges that face our region as they will be described in an upcoming report on the State of the South 2014. Farrell Guillory and I will be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Farrell Guillory, and he and I are talking about the challenges that our region faces in with respect to a lot of things, but you're focusing on youth this time.
Yeah. So some of the, as I was saying earlier, and I apologize for rattling on beyond
We got you on to rattle on and on. So yeah. That's what we want you to do. But my lingering question is, how does this differ from the challenges that our region has faced earlier with respect to getting our young people employed, or that people face throughout the country?
Okay. As I was saying, it's still better to have a BA and above than not. There's too much talk, in my estimation, not everybody has to go to college, and everybody in today's world needs to go beyond high school. Some sort of training, education, whether in community college or university. The unemployment rates, wage rates are much better for college graduates than they are for people who only have high school. But it's also true that because of the recession, college graduates don't get jobs that they anticipated or expected. And there's some indication from economic studies of displacement, so that university graduates are taking jobs that used to go to high school graduates, and that's displacing high school diploma to lower wage jobs. And so we do need in this region a burst of job creation, particularly middle-level, middle-skill jobs. But the other thing that really impressed us this year that we didn't quite anticipate is this Harvard-Berkeley study. It's called the Intergenerational Mobility Project. It's a stunning map that is online. You can take a look at it. I would show it on the radio if I could.
Well.
You know, that some of our most...
Can we put a link or something on
it? Yeah, we're going to link to it, and right. I'll give it to you. Some of our most prosperous places, including Raleigh, including Charlotte, including Greenville, Atlanta, the study indicates that people at the bottom, in the bottom quintile, the bottom fifth, are not very economically mobile. Some of the least mobile places or people, places where people are not very mobile, happen to be in some of our most prosperous places. And we've asked ourselves, and what we're discovering and we're still writing about and still thinking through is what does it take? Why has our prosperity not increased mobility among people in the, particularly in the lower 20%, but also in the, you know, the lower 40% of households? And so you are right that mobility opportunity for young people has been a persistent challenge in the American South for a long time, but we are looking at it in terms of the conditions of 2014, in which we've had increased income inequality. Our poverty rate has gone back up. We were on a downward slope in dealing with poverty. The poverty rate was going down in the South for a good 15 years, and we're back in poverty rates back to where we were in about 1990. And so we're asking ourselves, what can communities do? And we're looking at communities to see what local people are focusing on, or whether they're focusing on youth and young adults.
Have you got yet an illustration of a community activities that have made a significant and sort of permanent difference rather than just sort of a sideswipe at this problem?
Well, I don't want to say that, you know, somebody or some place has done everything and cracked the problem open, but there are efforts going on, like Project Lift in Charlotte. We're writing about that. I don't want to act like I'm an expert on it, but it's civic and philanthropic investment in schools and in some of the distressed schools in Charlotte, and trying to put young people, give them mentorship and enrichment to put them on a pathway.
And these work? Do they work as best you can tell, or are you trying
they're
to
beginning
find out?
That's what we're trying to find out. There are MDC, for instance, has worked with the community college with a grant from Gates and Lumina Foundation down in Brownsville, Texas, right on the border, to get more young people into the community college, get them beyond remedial education, move them on a pathway into jobs, and so there are efforts going on. We just don't want the South to stand immobilized, and we know that not every community can deal with the big picture of globalization and shifting job structure and all that, but we don't have to be immobilized, and we can work in our communities. A lot of it has to do with mobilizing people, getting groups together to understand what's facing the community, what's doable. The Made in Durham project is a lot about organizing the influentials in the community, you know, to focus on disconnected youth and those who are not fully ready for the modern economy.
Well, the sort of one of the current political responses is still, look, all of these things are great and keep at it, but the fundamental thing that we need to do to deal with poverty at all levels is to get the economy going, get some jobs that would be available, and that this is more than just what a few people in the community can do.
That's right. Yeah, and there's a great debate going on in our country in Congress, and you see it in the legislature in North Carolina and Raleigh. The great debate is the Republican side. The debate is cut taxes, liberate the free market, and that jobs will flow out of getting government out of the way, reducing the burden, what they say is the burdens of government, and that will release the job creators to kick in. The other side of the debate, which again you see in both Washington and in Raleigh, is that progress, economic progress, requires investment, spending, tax money in research in the universities, and it involves school reform. Investing in public education and in community colleges. It requires environmental regulation so that you have clean air, clean water, that you sustain a high quality of life that will attract businesses into your community. And so we've got this great debate going on about the role of government, about what actually works as stimulus, and so that's what undergirds the debate in Raleigh right now about teacher pay, about how do you deal with Medicaid and unemployment insurance, whether you put a cushion, whether you give people some economic security and health security while we're going through this economic transition. And so that's why our report is not about recruiting new business, and in fact, MDC has been skeptical of MDC call back in the 90s, the buffalo hunt.
The safaris.
It isn't that we don't want jobs to come in, and we don't want, but it's how do you build strong communities, strong schools that make your community attractive?
We're visiting with Farrell Guillory. He's talking to us about what he's learned and what he's going to teach us with the release of the State of the South 2014 report. He and I will be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Farrell Guillory is my guest. Farrell is, Farrell, we're focusing on your role as the principal and our lead author of the State of the South series. And you're working on one which we'll see in a couple of months, I guess, called the State of the South 2014. And you are really focused on youth, on the opportunities that are available for youth and getting them prepared to take advantage of what opportunities there might be. And it sounds to me like you're still searching for satisfactory to you responses that we can put out and suggest that people consider.
Yeah, there is no, big magic answer here. Book du jour by Thomas Piketty, the French economist, proposes a worldwide tax on capital, and we can't deal with that. It's an interesting thought, and so we're struggling as communities and policymakers are struggling with what's the right mix, the right stew of policy and practice here.
It sounds to me.
Okay. What we're trying to do is to say to the South, pay attention to this generation, to this, to the 15 to 24 year olds in your community right now. Think through what you can do, because 10 years from now, our friend Jim Johnson over in the Keene Institute, has a great line that one of the great things about demography is that 15-year-olds today are going to be 25-year-olds 10 years from now. And so this group 10 years from now going to be right at the core of our workforce. Our potential workforce. And some of these issues, mobility in particular, are generational. This is not something that you solve in a day or a year. This is stuff that you work at for a long time. So we just don't want the South to be immobilized or just to have everything stuck in Washington. What can we do in our local communities to get people moving upward if they can.
To represent the skeptics view, I try to be an optimist about this, but from the standpoint of a citizen who distances him or herself from this problem and looks at the situation that you all will be describing in the State of the South 2014, what you've got is if you think of yourself as a family or as a big business rather than just as separate entities, you've got a whole bunch of potential resources that you have not exploited. It's almost like having oil in the ground that you mm-hmm. don't take out, in the sense that we have underutilized youth.
Right.
Think if you want to be, think Durham gang members. These are, healthy, strong, creative young people who are, we would say, off on the wrong track because we're not taking advantage of them and giving putting them in harness to work.
Yeah.
And we would be, who knows when we go to the Golden Gate, what kind of a judgment will be placed on us. But just economically, we're missing the boat by not figuring out a way to maximize the potential contributions that these people can make.
And frankly, we've got some advantages in the Research Triangle area that other places in the South don't have. And the advantages is we've still got economic growth. To some extent, we're in kind of a bubble here. That things, there's still construction going on and all that. Some other places in the South, don't have that buoyancy. We're doing a little project in Alabama right now with the community college system, and it's, you know, finding that buoyancy is tough in the Deep South. In fact, that's one of the things that we've learned about the South over the last 10 years or so since the recession, is that the East Coast South, the Atlantic Seaboard South, Virginia, North Carolina, Georgia, Florida, and then you add in Texas, you know, as the other side, the peripheral South is much more buoyant economically than the Middle South, the Deep South, you know, Louisiana, yeah. Mississippi, Alabama, Arkansas, some of the best and brightest are leaving, looking for opportunities elsewhere. Population growth has been much flatter or close to flat in those states than in the than along the Atlantic seaboard. So different states, different communities have different ways and different issues to face. We're not profiling New Orleans, but as you know, I lived there for 6 years, and I pay attention to New Orleans. Right now, New Orleans has a challenge of tamping down violent crime as a precondition for bolstering the community and economic development there. It's got an issue facing it that wouldn't necessarily face Raleigh in the same, intensity, and so different communities have different challenges, and that's what we're getting at: is how are communities dealing with this? What can they learn from each other, or are they? David Dotson, the president of MDC, has come up with a interesting and challenging phrase to challenge communities, and that is, what is your infrastructure of opportunity? What are the pieces that you are arraying? What are the institutional and educational structures in your community that help youth and young adults put themselves at least in the position of having some opportunity?
So you have the leadership focus on what is available, what they can sell to these young people,
right.
And then you persuade them to go visit and talk with these.
And what array of assets they have. My own view, I'm not saying this is MDC's view right now, totally, is that I think states in the South need to think about public jobs, you know, whether you put out bond issues, you know, building parks, cleaning up areas, you know, something akin to the jobs programs of the Great Depression of the 30s. But I admit that that's a hard sell politically right now. But I think that there would be an advantage to the South of having jobs out there that get young people with some money in their pocket, but also with the habits of mind and the habits of life to go to work, work in teams, get the satisfaction from labor, but also leave behind public goods, public facilities, jobs that are not just make work, but actually make things happen in the community.
Well, we are visiting with Farrell Guillory. We're talking about the upcoming report that he is helping put together called The State of the South 2014. He and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Farrell Guillory is our guest, and he's been talking to us about his work on an upcoming report called The State of the South 2014. Farrell, you got another project that you work on that is State of the South is nonpartisan. It's trying to look at the problems rather than at sorting out the partisan ways to respond to it. But we do respond to all of our challenges in a partisan way, and DataNet sort of helps us understand what the ebb and flow of the political life is going to be. Have you got something coming up that we can look forward
to? Yeah, NCDataNet is a longstanding publication. It originated with our friend Tad Bile, who is retired now and is emeritus professor in political science. And when we started the UNC program on public life, you introduced me as a journalism faculty member, and I am. And my other role at the university is directing the program on public life.
Of which you're the founder.
Of which I'm the founder, yes. That's the reason I'm here, largely, was to – and, you know, and we've done, as you know, because you've participated in some – we do seminars and sessions for journalists in Raleigh. For 10 years or so, we did a leadership seminar for Southern legislators. We do nighttime meetings. Dinner meetings with legislators and university faculty members to try to enrich the knowledge and understanding of issues on the part of our policymakers. My soundbite for the program of public life is to inform the public agenda and to nurture leadership. Now, because we're at a big public university, we're nonpartisan too. But DataNet is not partisan, but I didn't mean to use the "but" as if I was headed toward
it's not, but
a different.
But it's in the context of
it's in the context of the partisan
approaches.
Yeah, and so when this interview appears in broadcast on the radio, we will have online at southnow.org, southnow.org, the newest DataNet. It looks at the change in our electorate in North Carolina as a result of population growth. We got from the State Board of Election 270-something thousand files of voters who registered between 2004 and 2012. And with the help of Ryan Thornburg, my colleague here at the university, and a number of very bright students, brighter than me, about how to deal with technology. We have come up with an interactive graphic and with a series of reports on where new voters come from in this state. New York, Virginia.
Give us the headlines. I mean, give us the headlines about the changes that you've...
Yeah, and so we can't track how every voter who moves here from New York, whether they registered Democratic or Republican or whatever. But here are the big findings. This state, which used to be 100 years or so ago, even back to the Civil War, very native-born, hardly anybody moved in. Now, 42% of the population of this state was born elsewhere. Now, that includes me, and I've been here 40 years. But this has been an accelerating trend. So that in the last election, in 2012, 48% of the voters were born elsewhere. And so North Carolina politics is now a combination of people who you know, lifetime residents here and people who have come in. And so we've got to think about all those voters who bring in their political inclinations from somewhere else and don't necessarily know the political history of the state. We've had a big boom in independent voters or unaffiliated voters registering that way. In several of our major counties, we've had an increase of more than of 100% or more in people registering unaffiliated. Now, most of these unaffiliated voters actually perform as Democrats or Republicans. But what it tells you is that candidates like Senator Kay Hagan and Speaker Tillis, who are competing for the Senate seat, they've got to go beyond their natural base to find enough voters to create a majority. And so those are the big... Those are the big headlines, and then you can go on.
Well, does this change in complexion to the foreigners like you and like me who come in at some point during their life?
You and I have been here long enough we can sing the old jingle, I Like North Carolina.
All right, so the newcomers, do they tilt towards one political party or another, or do they all tend to move into this part in the middle?
Well,
how does that work?
What the exit poll showed us, and that's, you know, that's not proof, but it's it gives you some indication. And some of the findings that public policy polling have come up with is this, just to give an example. Native-born North Carolinians and new and people who moved in here more than a decade ago, long-term residents, favored Romney over Obama in 2012.
Say that again. The newcomers,
the longer term,
the longer you've been here,
native North Carolinians and longer term,
I see,
in migrants favored Romney, and Romney, of course, won the state. But among people who moved in the last 5 to 10 years, Obama scored a 62% majority. He won a landslide among the real newcomers.
Why? I mean, because we don't. That's not. They're not broken down by race or.
Data nerds like me wish.
But the headline.
We could get all that data.
Well, I mean,
yeah.
That's the headline, isn't it? Those who came within the last 5 years favored Obama over Romney by 62%.
It was a landslide. Yeah.
Those who came came earlier favored Romney by a pretty strong percentage.
Right. Just anecdotally, just in your head, you can think of all the growth that went through the 80s and 90s and how that fueled the Republican surge in this state. But now North Carolina is a purple state. You know, with neither, you know, very competitive. And so the newer people coming, you know, the younger generation, mostly moving into the cities and the suburbs.
In the presidential election.
In presidential election and in gubernatorial elections. I mean, one of the reasons that Pat McCrory won in 2012 was he cut into the Democratic majority among newly arrived voters in Raleigh and in Charlotte. Our contests in this state are very competitive and very close. Nobody wins a landslide in this state anymore.
Well, you develop at least a tentative rule that more in-migration strengthens the Democrats more than it does the Republicans?
At least right now. Yes. And some of that is because of the Latino in-migration, too. And some of it has to do with you know, younger people coming into the cities, you know, higher wage, you know, the well-educated folks, their lifestyles and their kind of attitude towards issues have been favoring the Democrats right now. But it can change. As I told you, you know, it's changed North Carolina at least a couple of times. And so, this is what makes it interesting is you just got to keep tracking it. And so the data net that we're posting online, that will be online by this weekend, just takes another cut at it in addition to the county-by-county data that we have. So you can go click on Orange County on the interactive graphic and see how many new voters have signed up who moved here from New York or Virginia or South Carolina.
So, all right, well, now just got a minute. Just a minute.
But let me tell you. Tell you this.
All right.
Plus, we have profiles of a couple of dozen new voters that my students did. So we try to build in teaching with the program of public life of students, you know, as well as the outside work
that'll be great to see
with.
That. But, I mean, so What impact will all of this have on the Senate race, the Tillis-Hagan Senate race?
Well, we know that the Senate race will have a lower turnout because we don't have a presidential election, and so the impact is that both those candidates, and you see it already, have to spend a lot of money, and their partisans have to spend a lot of money to reach these newer voters who are not natural North Carolina voters. You know, they are aware of presidential elections, but you've got to educate them more and appeal to them more.
You just
and
got
other
me
elections.
All of a sudden excited about all the things I want to talk to you about, and we're out of time.
I'll be happy to come back.
I hope you will. Phil Guillory, thanks so much for giving us your time and your wisdom and for sharing with the whole public rich messages that you bring to us.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks to you for listening. All you all for listening. This is D.G. Martin, who's talking. I'll be back here before you know.